WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Jazz critic Kevin Whitehead says trumpeter Miles Davis had an infinite capacity for reinventing his music, usually to good ends. That's one reason why no one in jazz has had so many thorough and loving reissues lately. Earlier this year, we had a box set of airy and lyrical acoustic jazz by his celebrated 60s quintet. Last year, there were five double CD sets of his dense jazz funk of the 70s. Kevin says the new Miles Davis reissue, the complete Bitches Brew Sessions on four CDs, sort of bridges those two periods. It's a portrait of music in transition.
Easy to hear why Bitches Brew sold nearly 500,000 copies on first release in 1970. Its electric colors were still new to jazz, and it had a bubbling groove that sounded like it could go on forever. And it did. For years, Miles Davis had been pulling jazz away from the gymnastics of improvising over complex chord sequences. Bitches Brew was a last step along that path. 20-minute jams on just one or two chords where the musicians could place their comments anywhere in time, creating a polyrhythmic soup. It was a step away from bebop and toward African music in spirit, if not actual sound. That's Benny Maupin on bass clarinet and Chick Corea and Joe Zawinul on electric pianos. After some urging from Columbia Records, Miles Davis had decided to pursue the big money rock stars were making. He was seduced by the same false logic that misled other jazz musicians. Since we know more about music than the rockers, we can make even bigger selling pop records. It never worked out that way. Bitches Brew was a super funky bestseller for jazz, but it neither outsold nor outfunked, say, Sly and the Family Stone. Wayne Shorter on soprano sax, Lenny White and Jack DeJohnette on drums. Bitches Brew had some of the trappings of modern rock. The two-chord jam concept was familiar from Neil Young's Down by the River, also recorded in 1969. And Miles' guitarist, a newcomer from England named John McLaughlin, was for sure a better picker than Neil. But the music was too amorphous for radio pop. Rock involves simple forms, but not the absence of form. And jamming on one chord is more limiting than true free improvisation, which at least allows the possibility of escape. This was more like making sausage. You can keep extruding it endlessly to divide up later. That's Pharaoh's Dance from the August 1969 sessions for Bitches Brew. The reissue of that old 2-LP set runs to four CDs, tacking on material from five more Miles Davis sessions over the next 6 months. Almost an hour and a half of it is newly released. On the later sessions, there's a bit more structure to hang the improvising on, little sonic anchors like the recurring hooks in pop songs. Some of these tunes have as many as three chords, but the overall effect remained too diffuse for airplay. The focus stayed on exotic instrumental colors, with Indian sitar and tambora used as window dressing. These sessions also preview the most tiresome fashion accessory in 70s jazz, the add-on percussionist, armed with shakers, scrapers, clackers, and the dreaded chime rack. Miles's man was Brazil's Ayrton Moreira, who instantly became the king of percussion. This is Miles's take on David Crosby's Guinevere. Some folks claim producer and tape editor Teo Macero was the real brains behind Miles' music in this period. That idea is shot down by a bit of studio chatter included in the box as an editorial comment.
Okay, is this going to be part two?
It's going to be part nine. What difference does it make?
All right. There we go. Stand by. This is part something.
Some musicians on these dates, notably Joe Zawinul, have insisted they were the real creative forces at work. Miles Davis, as usual, gave his side folk lots of room to create and gave himself a little too much composer credit. But also, as usual, he showed a genius for editing other folks' compositions to make them more simple and clear, like Count Basie, by the way. Musicians came and went, but Miles followed his own path. In the next few years, his music evolved into the rhythmically denser, shifting plates of sound heard on Miles Davis at Fillmore and Dark Magus, and other wah-wah funk records that lots of us hated then and love now. Those records, to these ears anyway, wear a little bit better than Bitches Brew.
Kevin Whitehead is the author of New Dutch Swing. He reviewed the Miles Davis reissue, The Complete Bitches Brew Sessions, on Columbia.